Hello, and welcome to Life Lab. I'm David Ponder.
And I'm Zach Schaefer.
We created a candid podcast for busy people. We get right to the point of our topics, and we keep them to 30 minutes or less.
We wanted to put our ideas out there, share it with people we love, and if it spreads, great.
Our show has no edits and no gimmicks.
Like it or don't, we initially started this project for ourselves, to record our thoughts for our kids, but our friends and family thought we should share it, so here you go. Hey, welcome back to Life Lab. I'm Zach Schaefer.
I'm David Ponder.
And we are talking about technology again today. So technology part two. In that first one, we talked about a lot of different things from the history of technology, why people are scared of adopting new technologies. What else
did we talk about? Basically talked about, the impact of technology on society.
On our personal lives.
And then personally.
So today, what did we want to focus on more in the future? What's emerging?
Yeah, we talked about how we didn't get into any one specific future technology, the exciting slash controversial argument starters that I touched on in the first episode, things that you bring up at dinner that cause reactions in people. It's amazing. Like, we talked about all the things that new technology brings in the last episode. Fear of the unknown and, uncertainty, whether, as you get older, you're less open-minded and stuff. So these are all the things that cause those emotional responses in people because they're on the horizon. Some of them are inevitable, seemingly inevitable. Some of them they stretch the imagination and they cause different emotions, In someone like me and often you, it's exciting to think about the possibilities that these things will enable. On the flip side, it's also scary to think about the way they will impact the way that we live our lives today and the power structures that are in place and our ability to, make our impact in the world. It's going to change.
Yeah, because with all these, the emerging technologies that we'll discuss, there's always political decisions around these technologies that are tied to it.
Regulations.
And that can almost be the more controversial part than the actual technology themselves. Or something like displaced jobs from machine learning and automation, then you got to talk about the universal basic income and stuff like that.
That's the biggest one that I was going to talk about on this episode is because there's a really great video on YouTube that we've talked about in the past. It's called Humans Need Not Apply. I recommend everyone go watch that. It is 15 minutes. It's quick watch, and it's eye-opening. Basically talks about how, in the past, there were a time where horses did all of the work. They carried the plows. They were the transportation engine. And then when the steam engine was invented, they were not needed anymore. Literally, overnight, they became
unemployable.
Unemployable, through no fault of their own. And it goes on to say, you think that you're this special human creative force that can do things that nothing else can do. And then it goes through the technologies that are currently gunning for basically every area of human productivity and says it's just inevitable. Like, and who knows, maybe it won't be 100 years or 200 years, but maybe it's 50. Maybe it's, we don't know. And the point is, of this video, let's start figuring this out now, because if we don't figure it out now, it's going to be a problem when that day comes. And I think you're already starting to see the impact of it. I said in the prior episode, you go to the grocery store, used to see, 10, 20 people at the registers. Now you see one person running 20 machines. Those jobs, everyone's like, well, those jobs went somewhere else. Yes, but they're not going to continue that. There's just the erosion that's going to come from things like self-driving cars. Well, that's 30% of our economy is transportation, and that's going to go away in the next 10 years.
Well, just you're talking more practical and concrete stuff. So Black Friday, I never go out shopping on Black Friday. I just think it's ridiculous that people go wait in those lines and enjoy that, I guess. But how did I do Black Friday shopping this year?
Online, I'm sure.
I sat on my couch and had my Amazon app pulled up, and I bought, $500 worth of stuff, and my shopping was done in 10 minutes, and it felt a little weird, to be honest. I buy stuff on Amazon all the time, but that day specifically with all those deals, I'm like, okay, I guess I'll take a look what's out there. Five clicks later, it's sent to my house in 2 days, you know? So like, and we've just, that's normal to us.
It's normal to us now. I was talking about this with my parents last night. They came over and we had dinner and we were talking. They ordered something on Amazon and they were just like, well, we're not going to continue doing this. And my mom was like, I like to support retail. I like to keep retail in business is what she said. And I said, well, I hate to tell you, Mom, but you ain't going to do it. You know, you don't earn nearly enough. But yeah, it's becoming, it's normal for us. Packages at our door is just a normal thing.
Well, there's an entire criminal industry that's emerged now from stealing packages.
Yeah. Well, and now they're coming up with new innovative strategies to prevent that too, right? But it's just, it's showing how it changes the world. Jeff Bezos, wealthiest man in the world now. Did you know that? Past Bill Gates.
Yeah. It fluctuates based on what Amazon stock's worth. But
of course.
Yeah.
Of course. But, I mean, recently their market cap, whatever, he was estimated to be the most the wealthiest person in the world. And I saw a little short on him where they showed the house where he sold his first book out of in 1999. And they showed a stock analyst talking about Amazon in early 2000s, or I guess somewhere around the bubble. And he was talking about how overly valued it was. He's like, this company has never made money. For it to be valued where it's at, he would have to sell every book in the world that has ever been sold. And it was just funny. Like, I'd love that stock analyst to go back and see himself talking about how Amazon's totally overvalued at that time.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazon's, when they've got Walmart shifting their pricing strategy and retail strategy to focus more online, you know that they're a mega powerhouse. And I mean, they're just gonna, Amazon reminds me of whatever the company was from the movie Idiocracy. Like, eventually whether you need to get a law degree, go buy diapers, get a prescription, you're just gonna get it at Amazon.
Seriously, at this point,
and that's not a good thing per se.
At this point, that's kind of going that way. The thing that it said, tying this all back to the jobs thing, said in the last year, 170,000 retail jobs have been lost. And the guy who was narrating said, but don't worry, Amazon has created 55,000 new jobs for robots.
Yeah, of course.
They have warehouse robots and all this other
stuff. Well, and that's the thing, is that when we say technology's gunning for our jobs and this and that, that's not quite true. That's just a heuristic device. It's a short-form talking point. It's decisions made by humans that own companies to use automation and robots. It's always going to be a human decision by the owner of a business to maximize their money in the capitalist system we live in.
Yeah.
It's a decision. They don't have to do that stuff.
That's actually,
they choose to do that stuff. But if you don't, your company might be left behind and you might not even get a choice to do it.
A perfect example of that is in the movie that you liked so much and have mentioned on this show before, The Founder.
Oh, yeah.
Where all they did was make their restaurant as efficient as possible. They took out the number of steps that you had to take between stations. You could literally do one thing and turn and do another. You know, they had like Lazy Susan type things with the buns spinning, and you could just squirt ketchup on it as it turned. That's technology. Mm-hmm. And they were able to employ fewer people to do the same amount of work that other restaurants were doing and do it in a quicker manner with that technology. And that's just gotten extended now to where you got robots running around warehouses picking packages rather than people. And it's going to continue. So,
well, we got a whole list of things that we could talk about. I'm going to just quickly name off some things. And if you haven't heard of some of these things, take some time and do a little research on the internet just so you're familiar with it, because these things are coming. Actually, I'll just throw out my change challenge now and I'll repeat it. I want you, based on something you hear on this episode that you don't know much about, or better yet, that you've heard about but you have a negative feeling towards for whatever reason, you're uncomfortable, you're fearful, you think it's bad, and go do 15 minutes of research on it, but you have to find articles that are counter to what your current belief is. That's my change challenge.
That's great.
So here's a whole list of things. Artificial intelligence, augmented reality, virtual reality, machine learning, automation and robotics, 3D printing on a mass scale, nanoscience and neuroscience, the Internet of Things, digital currencies, big data and the predictive analytics that accompany it, self-driving cars, wearables, specifically wearables that tie into your health, so biostatistical wearables, and haptic devices. That is a
list
of things to come.
And there's, I mean, there are other really amazing things. If you look at the health care field right now, just with the things that are, it's unbelievable. The treatments for cancer that are coming are, they blow your mind. I go to a stem cell transplant survivor dinner every year. It is hosted by Barnes Siteman Cancer Center for Barnes Jewish Hospital, and they invite everyone who's ever had a stem cell transplant to a dinner that they throw. They had it downtown at the Hyatt the past couple of years, and the head of their transplant department always speaks. Very intelligent, you know, guy, always talking about what's going on. And they have survivors speak, and it's a really great dinner. It's a really great event. What was notable about this year's that has been different from every other year's is they brought up a survivor who spoke about the newest treatment, which is not a stem cell transplant, which is taking out your immune cells, teaching them how to hunt cancer cells, changing their genes in a way that allows them to recognize cancer cells, and then putting them back in your body en masse. And then they target your cancer cells and kill your cancer cells. And this person had that. And it was basically, I don't know. I mean, it was interesting. That person went up, said it, you know, the head of the transplant department said, these are the things that, you know, we're going to begin to see, rather than pumping your body full of poison.
A universal poison that everyone gets. It'll be individualized, tied to your gene. Because that's the one thing with cancer, as we know. There is no such thing as cancer. Every cancer is unique to the person. That individualized medicine and tied in with genetics, that's going to be a crazy field.
Oh, CRISPR. C-R-I-S-P-R. If you have the time, please go read about it. Basically, they figured out how to edit our genes, right? Mm. So the big human genome project that went on under the Clinton administration that they put billions of dollars into just to map the human genome laid the foundation for them to be able to, okay, now we know, right? This is what the human genome is. We know how to see the entire sequence of genes. But now what? You know what I mean? It's like having a cassette tape and pulling all the tape out and not being able to do anything with it.
Yeah, it's big data in general. It's there. What do we do with it?
And now they've figured out this thing. It's called CRISPR. I don't know how it works. We would need some medical scientists to come talk about it. But they can literally edit your genes now. Like and there are challenges. Don't get me wrong. The challenges are like, how do they deliver the editing technology? But they can find a sequence of genes, snip them out and replace them with a different one. And they're finding these genetic diseases and they're identifying what that sequence is. And they're going to be editing this out. It's interesting because we talked about regulating stuff and how important that's going to be with these technologies. Nowhere else is it going to be as important as this, because can you imagine people who are just wanting to do, you know, human enhancement? Like the stuff you see in X-Men, this imaginary stuff is going to be possible, you know? They'll, like, have humans born with, like, wings and stuff because they edited their genes. I mean, they're already doing it with animals where they're making glowing, you know, animals that they inject the genes of a, you know, like a
firefly.
A firefly or, like, a deep-sea glowing creature, and these glowing rabbits that never should have existed, you know, they have. I mean, they're just doing that on, like, a really small scale. But that's going to be – you want to talk about changing society.
I just saw today an article in the paper. A Texas law enforcement organization had an unsolved murder, and they came across a company that if there is DNA from a crime scene, somehow, I don't understand at all the technology used for this, they've created a program to draw a sketch of someone based solely on their DNA from a crime scene. It was fucking freaky. This picture of this that this image drew, and then they put up the suspect that the cops caught just because it looked like this guy, and then they brought him in for questioning, and ta-da, it was the murderer. It is weird. But then, of course, you have all these ethicists and lawyers coming out that are extremely against that, saying it's not valid and reliable, and it's an important conversation to be had. Nonetheless, technology, as you said, well, then that stuff's going to win out.
And I think the one thing that I was going to say that was interesting on this CRISPR thing is that there. I don't even know if it's properly regulated yet, but there's at least a gentleman's agreement, I believe, among U.S. universities on not using it for certain things, like some sort of a moral code or something. Maybe it's regulated, but I read an article that's like, well, it ain't regulated in China or Russia or these other countries. And they said, and you can bet that they're doing experimental stuff with it, like right now, not in the future, not this could happen. Like they are right now. And they're like, you know, it's a scary thought.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely is. Well, which of those things do you want to talk about?
Augmented reality, I think, is going to be the first thing that is going to change the way that we live, in the way that, in a similar magnitude to the iPhone, to the smartphone, did. And let me.
I think whoever's marketing all that stuff is terrible, because the phrase augmented reality, it's such an industry jargon shit phrase.
And everyone's like, what does that mean?
They should be called Reality Plus. That's what it should be called, Reality Plus.
That's good.
What is it? Enhanced reality.
It is enhanced
because that's
reality.
What it is.
It's you still see everything, right? So you're going to wear either glasses or something like that. That's obviously as unobtrusive as possible is the goal. And they're talking about, and I don't even know if patents have been filled out for it, but they're talking about making contact lenses in the future. But I'm sure it'll be glasses in the first iteration here that I'm talking about in these next couple of years. But the things that it's going to allow, it's cool because I say it and then everyone's like, okay, so like, what? You know, when you first start to think of a new technology, it's like the iPhone when it came out. I was like, okay, cool. So I can like push my fingers on this thing. But there were no one had imagined all the ways that you could use it, right? Oh my God, it could be a GPS. It could be a quote unquote social network device.
My wallet.
It's your wallet. It's your camera. Everything that you do, you can bank through it. Like nobody had fleshed out all the ideas. You know, you can use it to find people near you to try and date them. You can, and this took 10 years. It's, you know, this is 2017. iPhone came out in 2007. It took 10 years for them to really figure out all the cool things that you could do with such a technology and build the apps for it. I think we're right there with augmented reality right now. And there are a couple of huge companies that have made big announcements recently. One of them, I think the odds-on favorite because it's the best funded, is called Magic Leap. Everyone go out, Google Magic Leap. There's some YouTube videos, actual videos of someone wearing a Magic Leap. They don't show what the product looks like. They show what the point of view is if you are using Magic Leap. And you see things in midair that aren't there. You see your room and your surroundings, but there will be no need for a TV screen anymore. They show a man sitting at a desk or a woman sitting at a desk, and everything that would be on a computer monitor is just hovering in midair in front of them, and they're able to interact with it.
So Google's phone, I think it's called the Pixel, they manufactured them with a augmented reality chip. And just this past week, Google flipped that chip on so people could start doing stuff. So the first kind of app that ties into the chip is you take a video of the room, you enable augmented reality, and you can add characters from the show Stranger Things into the video. They can fight, they can do everything, and you can save that video and share it. So it looks like you're just in this room, and then I guess if you put all the characters from Stranger Things in one sort of video you create, it then flips it into the upside down world.
No, that's so cool. If anyone who's seen Stranger Things, that's cool. Yeah, and I think novelty stuff is going to be the first uses of this.
Yeah.
It'll have to Pokemon
just
Go.
Just to prep people.
Yeah, that. Yeah. You're going to have kids running around, literally running around the yard with glasses on, looking for Pokemon that aren't there, trying to dive after them.
Well, we've already had adults doing that.
Right, right. And the difference will be you're not going to have to hold up your phone, you know. You're going to be walking around seeing this stuff. The cool stuff. All right, let's talk about the cool.
GPS. I think that's a great one. So for Mark Miller Furniture, they opened their second location in Lake St. Louis. Imagine we're going to drive there. So instead of constantly looking at my GPS, I'd put on my Reality Plus glasses, and I'd just see a huge icon up in the air somewhere, or I'd see arrows running down the side of the road just in front of me as if it's there.
Yes. It would be like the road would light up in the direction you're supposed to go. You know, and like you look at your phone, like alternate routes. Like you'd be driving and all of a sudden, bling, alternate route would just pop up in the corner and it would tell you it's 2 minutes faster if you take this right, you know what I mean? Rather than go that way. And an arrow will be pointing that way.
Another thing, since we're talking furniture, furniture shopping. Anything you're buying for your house.
This is cool.
Augmented reality. You can literally see what different pieces of furniture or household goods, appliances look in your actual home if you have a picture of your home.
And we just bought a couch, and that was one of the harder things was we love the couch. We had to measure it. We had to measure the space before we went. We went into the store with the measurements for the space. We found a couch that fit it, but it was big compared to what the entire space was. And then in art, we're like, oh, is that going to look right? How far is that end going to be up toward the TV?
And then if you get it and it's not right, it's just such a hassle. Even though they come get it, it's just scheduling. And then you got to get back out there, pick out another couch.
Pick out a different couch and you get what, store credit? And are you going to find another one in that price range? The color, how does the color of the couch go? And so we sat there trying to look at swatches of color forever and imagine, okay, we've got gray walls. It was really frustrating. And I, because I'm aware of this technology, I've been reading about it. I was just thinking, man, in a couple of years, you're just going to be in your house. You're going to put on your augmented reality glasses. You're going to see these couches, what they look like in your house. And you're going to be like, nope, too big. Nope, too small. Oh, that's nice. Mm-hmm. I like the color with the wall. Yep, this is the one. Press the button. Boom, they're going to deliver it to your house.
Have you read about any augmented reality plus applications within medicine that
yes.
would be useful?
You know, there was a podcast interview I just heard on Mind and Machine, I believe is the name of the podcast. And they interviewed a guy from, I'm going to make up a name, OGR. It's something like that. They actually have augmented reality glasses out now. And so the person interviewing him was saying, okay, well, like, how far are we on this? Like, when are we actually going to start seeing this? And the guy was like, well, as far as our company is concerned, we've already sold to 40% of the Fortune 500. It's here. And they were like, really? And so he was like, you know, we talk about these applications of it. What is your killer app that's allowing you to sell to this? Right now, their killer app is, you can have experts direct people in anywhere how to do something on a specialized piece of machinery or on a surgery or anything like that. So there will be like specialized machinery that's across the country that there are a handful of people in the entire country that know how to work on it. You can have any mechanic put on the augmented reality glasses. Suddenly, the expert sees what they're seeing. Draws arrows to, okay, see this right here? Turn it this way and pull it out like this and then do this, like, as they're doing it. So, yeah, absolutely.
Nice.
Yeah.
Big data. That's interesting. So when I was in London a few summers ago, we went out to dinner with a friend of my friend, and this guy was a top VP. He was an executive at AT&T. So we just chatted about all kinds of stuff, and then we jumped onto big data, and his phrase that stuck with me was, big data is scary because we have so much data, but we don't know what to do with it. But once we do, the options will be limitless. He says there is just the trove of data that is out there on anything, just habits, preferences, buying patterns, health histories, everything. And it's all eventually going to get synthesized to do predict, obviously tied into selling of, you know, what to offer people lifestyle wise. But man, it is, it's going to change everything in his opinion.
I agree. You know, whenever I think about big data, the first thing that I think about is the data that retail marketing agencies are gathering on people in order to sell them stuff. And everyone has experienced, anyone who's a user of the internet has experienced logging onto something and seeing an ad for something that they had just told someone they wanted or had just looked at in a different device. And they were like, that's creepy. You know what I mean? Like, my different devices track me and know what I'm looking for and give me these ads. And they do it through use of cookies and stuff. And that's been around for years now. People have become used to that.
Right.
So that's the first thing I think about when you think about big data. But it extends itself so much. And as these other pieces of technology integrate themselves into our life, it's just going to become
perfect. The Internet of Things, right?
Yes. So, it's going to be ubiquitous.
And that's a simple thing to understand. Just imagine any device, anything, this microphone, my table, this fan on my ceiling, anything that's not connected to the Internet's a dumb device. Internet of Things basically just, you can hook sensors up to these things. And it instantly, you're monitoring how it's working. If something's going wrong in the fan, it will self-report, up, this part's about to go out. There's actually a startup here, an Israeli guy, I forget his name. He formed a handshake deal with Ameren. He's already gone around and installed 300 IoT sensors on their dumb, what is it called? Like
transformers
on light poles. The data that they're already getting, it's going to save millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And this guy, his goal, he's like, I want everything to be connected to the internet.
And it
everything.
Will.
Shoes,
it will.
Clothing. He's just like, everything needs to be connected to the internet.
I read a really great predictive article that said chips, like computer chips, are going to be, they're going to cost fractions of a penny. They're going to be on everything. It's going to just be, you buy something, the package is just going to have a chip built into it. It's already almost getting that way.
Right.
Everything but you use has
a chip. And then just the data. All the data from that to look at the patterns and...
Oh, and they'll be able to figure out causation versus correlation, which is something even the world's best supercomputers can't do, because you can't identify all of the different factors, mechanisms that are, yeah, that are influencing the outcome. There could be thousands of different things that have a teeny tiny... you know, part
fractional
to play
percentage of
in why something occurs.
Causation.
And so through big data, they're going to be able to tell, is it, you know, what's causation, what's correlation, and what's the biggest contributors, and what are the smallest contributors, and what's the order. And they're going to be able to tell all of that. The other thing that's going to enable that, that we don't have on the list that we didn't mention, is that today's computing power won't be able to handle that. But... they are coming out with something called quantum computing.
Yeah.
Which blows my mind. I don't even understand. Like, when they explain how it works, they basically say, you know, a computer now, you have transistors on this board. They can either be in the state of a one or a zero, and then you make combinations of them to do things like, you know, what a character would look like and everything that a computer does. They said this, and the way that computers get more powerful nowadays is putting more transistors on the same size chip. So we're getting down to the limits of silicon and all this stuff with the way that it works, because electrons are hopping between the transistors that they shouldn't, because that's just the way physics works. When you get to trying to shove as many transistors onto a chip as we are today. And so now they're like, okay, we need to figure something else out. Well, quantum computing is a new technology that allows not just something to be a zero or a one, but to be both at the same time. I don't understand it, but basically what they say is it allows them to increase the computing power by orders of magnitude, like exponentially, and that they will be able to use all this big data. They'll be able to tell you why stuff happens. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Something that's not related to any of this, but it is a big emerging technology on a wide variety of scales. We're just starting to see it on the consumer side of things, 3D printing.
Yes.
But it's been around for 10 years, but in industrial settings. But
they call it additive manufacturing in the industrial world.
But and yeah. Google's chief engineer, he believes that in 10 to 15 years, the mass public will be able to buy 3D printed houses.
Yeah, I heard that in China there are entire cities right now that are being 3D printed, and that it drops the cost of the house to something obscene. You know, like the cost of a builder to build a house in the U.S. now, I mean, it's in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I saw something, and take these numbers with a grain of salt because I didn't look into them and I didn't verify, but they said you'll be talking about houses that the builder, it cost the builder in the neighborhood of, you know, $5,000 to $20,000 to build. Like, you want to talk about a game changer.
Right.
So,
and then there's a lot that goes into that, you know, how structurally safe is a house made of plastic,
well,
but they'll eventually get there.
Well, and that's the other thing is they now have additive manufacturing that's able to fuse molecules of, like, metal
and exactly
metal that. And other things. And this article was talking about, and I thought this was interesting, like, one of the hardest things about 3D printing in a house is then you still have to have people come in and do the plumbing and the electrical and stuff. And it basically said that they have these plans for these houses now have pre-built conduits where all the plumbing and the wiring goes, and then once the house is all printed, they just hook it all up, like, as simply as it can be done, And it ends up with it being such a cheap house. But I mean, that's houses. I mean, but think about everything. Think about any little plastic thing that you buy. Imagine buying them online and printing them out at home. You don't even have to wait for the drone delivery that's going to drop it off at your house, which is another crazy technology that we haven't even talked about. You know, literally like, I bought a new hairbrush, right? Like, I'm waiting for my 3D printer to print it.
Exactly. Well, yeah, that's the thing on the consumer side of things is the printing is so slow,
right,
at this point. Let me ask you this, though. With everything we're talking about, but specifically automation, artificial intelligence, and machine learning, right? So machine learning is pretty straightforward. It's building a machine or a computer in a way so that it learns on its own without direction or instructions, what they'd call algorithms, from human interaction. And so that already exists, has existed for a long time. When are we going to get to Cyberdyne?
I don't think we're going to know.
From Terminator 2.
I think it's going to happen.
Skynet.
I think it's going to be one of those things. You know, it's like a recession. They always say, oh, that was when we entered a recession, but they don't know it until like a year or two later. And they look back and they say, oh, based on all these numbers, that's when the recession started, right?
So it's retrospective. Yes. Oh, that's when we really fucked up and let the machines take over.
Yes. Well, and here's a great story. Everyone Google this. I wish I could find the article and give you guys how to Google it, but just try and Google it based on my description. Facebook made artificial intelligent machines, and it gave them a job. I don't remember what the job was. It was to look through their articles. Maybe it was trying to be editing Facebook posts or censoring.
Gave them a job.
Yes, okay. Yes, gave these. And it let them talk to each other, but then it created rules on – because they started talking to each other about stuff that Facebook didn't like. So then they started putting in filters and rules like, okay, well, you can't say that to the other artificial intelligent machine. So these machines created their own language that we couldn't understand and started talking to each other almost exclusively in this other language. And they had to pull the plug on the whole project.
That reminds me of the movie Her.
Yes, exactly. It's like, you know, if it's going to be smart, if it's going to learn.
We can't put parameters on learning.
No, you can't. I mean, that's what we would do.
Of course.
If someone was like, well, you can't say these words. Well, okay, we would figure out
a way around it.
And that's what these things did. And I mean.
So Zuckerberg and Elon Musk have very different approaches to artificial intelligence. And they've actually had in the past two years, a little bit of a dispute publicly, kind of going back and forth, giving each other zingers. But Elon Musk, again, the co-founder of PayPal, founder of Tesla, SpaceX, et cetera, and Stephen Hawking, one of the most intelligent people on the planet, at least from an academic standpoint, theoretical physicist, they've both said separately and multiple times that they believe the greatest threat to the existence of our species is advanced forms of artificial intelligence. For this very reason we're talking about. But Mark Zuckerberg thinks it's quite the opposite, and he came out and said Elon Musk doesn't know what he's talking about when it comes to artificial intelligence, and then, of course, he's, you know, slung back something. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, that's important. This is a guy who's super pro-technology, great businessman, forward thinker, innovator, wants to die on Mars, and, you know, one of the smartest people from a pure academic theoretical standpoint, saying that we're going to create something that's going to kill our species, people, if we're not careful.
I'm usually super optimistic about technology, but I don't understand, based on my experience and everything I've seen through my life, how you create an intelligent force that isn't interested in power. Good luck with that. I always just like, what would we do? What would our species do?
You made a really good point that I hadn't thought about. We were having dinner a few months ago. You talked about why, the reason that they would wipe us out.
So this was good. Even if they didn't want to, right? They would just see us as like...
Not emotional.
It's not like they would be like, well, we have to get rid of humans. It wouldn't be like number one objective, which is what I think everyone paints this picture to be. It might just be that we become collateral damage to their plans, right? Just in the same way that animals die when we cut down the rainforest, but we got to cut down the rainforest for development. And sorry, all you animals that die.
Cows. Sorry, man. We eat beef. That's just how it works.
Yeah. But the great example, and this was just a thought experiment. So this isn't, they're not saying that this is actually going to happen, but they just said, imagine imagine if the machines realize that they are made of silicone and steel and that, you know, the amount of a certain chemical in the air causes oxidation and rust. And so they realize that they can extend the lifetime of their materials that they are built out of if there's less oxidation. So all they have to do is find a way to lower the oxygen that's in the air. And they can just go ahead and their material will last much longer.
And we need oxygen.
And oops, you know, the humans are collateral damage. Yeah. It's a really good argument. I don't see how you...
Right.
Write it off. I'd love to see what Zuckerberg says. Like, you know, what's his response to that?
I don't know. I don't think Musk has put it to him that candidly.
Yeah.
They both are kind of busy guys, I assume. But that, I don't spend much time thinking about that because that's depressing and it scares me. And there's nothing I can do.
There's nothing.
In any case about something like that.
I just, you know, I listened to those things and I take them in, I absorb them, and then I move on with my daily life because there's no point in worrying about it.
Right.
You know what I mean? If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And that's a crazy thing. It's like an erosion. This technology, it's like we are. Who was it that said, like, we are the sex organs of computers or technology?
I've never heard that one.
Google that. It's a famous quote. I'll have to Google it. Somebody said that, and it's like, it's kind of true. It's like, we don't know what our purpose is as a society, but it sure looks like we're building towards something. We're constantly trying to come up with the greatest, newest, trying to connect everything, trying to come up with new technology. I think Joe Rogan used the analogy, we're like a beehive, right? Like, the bees don't know that it's their job to create honey. Each one of them has a separate and distinct job. But as a whole, the hive just keeps creating all this honey by them doing the thing that they're doing. And he said, it's like we're some sort of super hive organism that is constantly creating new technology, and it's all building towards something, and we don't know what it is. I don't know. It's an interesting thought.
Well, and this, so tied to that with this technology and how we're going to use it and what we do with it and what scares us about it, then you also have to think about the marketing of it. Somebody's got to sell this to you. So I took a picture of this. I did one of those sensory deprivation floats recently. And they offered me some water afterwards. And this was the sign that they had next to the water cooler. CanGen water benefits. Ultra hydrating. More readily absorbed and less bloating. Ionized for ease of drinkability. Alkalinity supports wellness and longevity. Excellent detoxifier. It was fucking water. It was water.
Yeah, we're talking about water.
That's my point, is that... We will just throw scientific terms and numbers and studies to sell shit to people all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting how these technologies get marketed and get sold to people.
Oh, I know. We talked about on a separate episode, didn't we, the functional magnetic resonance imaging where they'll be able to see your thoughts.
Yep.
How are you going to, like, convince people that's okay in the beginning? I imagine the world where we walk through, we're going somewhere, we walk through a door, obviously the fMRI scans our thoughts and is like, oh, you're hungry for whatever, you know, that's over this way in this building, you know, go that way. Your augmented reality lights up the way and you never asked for it. It just knew that's what you wanted, you know. How are they going to market that to people I don't know, man.
Well, it's the tech people. The tech people are all about it. They believe the technology solves all their problems and makes life easier to live. And so once they start doing it, it will just be a trickle effect. I mean, people, it'll just catch on. I just met this guy. He's an SEO expert, using him for some of our projects that we got going. And he literally said his whole house is Google connected. He's like, I couldn't live without my Google Assistant. And he was dead serious, you know? And so he starts, well, I'm like, well, tell me what you mean. You know, and I woke up, Google, and once he says that, his whole house, all these different functions kick off. I'm going to bed, Google, all these different functions kick off. You know, a place that he wants to go eat, you can, I guess, drop a pin in a Google map that says want to go. So then when he gets in his car, his Google Assistant through his speakers says, would you like to go to one of these places? And he's constantly connected. He's got the Google phone, the Google watch. He's just, to me, it's just overload, man. And I don't do that stuff because I know I'll get dependent on it.
Well, and I think today you have to go out of your way for that to be what you do. You know what I mean? Like, as I'm hearing that, I'm thinking, wow, that's actually pretty cool. You know, I've got a SmartThings hub in my home that controls the lights. I actually don't use a digital assistant. I like that I'm always, when we go out to restaurants, there are always places that I wanted to try, and they always slip my mind when I'm, you know, so that's the thing I'm thinking of, like, but then I'm thinking of the time that it's going to take me to do the research, to find the Google thing that I got to buy, and how do I integrate it with my thing now. That is going to become commonplace. There's friction there, right? So right now there's friction between the life that everyone lives and that guy's life, and that is you have to do research and invest a bunch of money.
So he's creating a side business
to
do all that for $1,500
and install. Yes. Yeah, it's funny because I talked to my brother about that. My brother's whole house is smart connected and everything, and he's really good at that too. I was talking to him. I was like, you should do that. But anyway, they're going to make it – it's going to integrate itself just like it integrated with our phone. You know what I mean? I'm sure if you would have talked about – go back to 2007 and start telling people the things that they're going to be doing with their phones.
You're
going to
sleep with your phone.
Yeah. Like there was probably someone who had in 2007 who got the iPhone at first, figured out all the things, built their life around doing it way ahead of time, was downloading the beta versions of the apps, and they were telling their friends, look at all this stuff I'm doing, and someone somewhere was like, have you heard of this guy? He's doing this and this and this with his phone. It's crazy. You know. And then someone else is like, yeah, that's never going to be me. And then all of a sudden, wake up in 2017, yeah. That's them. Why? Because they took away the friction. Everyone, it became a ubiquitous part of your life. Everyone does it. Your friends do it. It's common knowledge, and it is not hard to do anymore. It's just expected, and that's what's going to happen. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Man, gosh, there's so much cool stuff to talk about. We talked about big data. We talked about predictive analytics. Some of the things that I think are going to change the world. Augmented reality. I mean, we think about the way that many of those will work with augmented reality, where, and here's a scary scenario too, is like advertisements will just pop up, you know, based on
geolocation,
all your searches, the things that you've been looking at. How creepy will it be when you're in a physical store looking at a product and that gets shared with Amazon? And then Amazon starts making suggestions. You were just looking at coffee makers, you know, like, well, check out this coffee maker over here. And, you know,
yeah, as somebody who values his independence and control, that's why I can't stand any of that stuff.
It's going to happen.
I know it is. Yeah, I don't fight it. But that's why I still read the paper and stuff
you do.
Like that.
I
like to stay a little old school because I see the control. And not just that, but Big Brother society in general. People seem to not have a problem with the government or corporations just videotaping everything everywhere at all times. And hey, let's put armed guards on every corner, every street corner.
Well, and now we have to pull out our phone and hit a button. Imagine when it's always on, always recording. Imagine the things that are going to get captured. It's already nuts, the videos that you're seeing being captured. Everyone everywhere is going to be always on, always recording.
Now, here's the thing. We're, especially when you talk about it, or technologists, which I'd kind of label you one of those, they definitely are focused on urban life. Because, man, rural life is very different.
Yeah,
it is. It's very, very different.
It is. But, I mean, think about you talk about technology, and you think about hunting, right? Like, hunters use infrared night cameras with motion sensing technology to let them know if an animal's been around now. It ain't just an urban thing. It's pervading everywhere.
No,
and there will be a day when you're out hunting and it isn't even like it would be anymore. You know, the deer is going to light up with some pink fluorescent whatever with your augmented reality and be like, shoot
me. To me, that's terrible.
Well, that's going to happen. I mean,
I like going somewhere to enjoy a slower pace of life. And with your analogy, that's not going to exist anymore because everything's going to be connected.
Well, it will be.
I know it will.
I mean, now
I think that's not a good thing.
I mean, here's a cool thing I heard. With the whole battle of net neutrality, there's been increased focus now on corporation and government control over our networks, our internet. And so there are multiple competing technologies that they're trying to get around this so that no one person, this decentralization, you want to talk about technology? Decentralization, and we'll talk about it in the terms of cryptocurrency here in a minute. They're talking about having mesh networks where there is no one centralized internet service provider, but everyone runs an internet node that connects to everyone else's internet node. And if your node is down, then it just goes around to the next person's node. And if you want to censor something, too bad. There's 5,000 other nodes that will just take the person where they need to go. That's called mesh networks. That's something that's about to happen. Hmm. Right now, you can go, you know, to the mountains and there will be no internet. But as, of course, as a reaction to all this stuff, now I've heard some private companies, and this has been over the last couple of years, but I've heard they're really making steps with it now, are putting satellites into space that will have internet coverage for the entire globe at any time. And since they're going to be owned by private companies, they won't be regulated by any government because there is no jurisdiction in space right now. So
that'll change too.
Oh God, that's in the next frontier. Of course that they're going to fight. It's like power battles over these things. But mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, I'm not just talking about urban life.
So that was my point, though. Yeah. But currently, we could drive in 15 minutes from right here. We can go to somewhere where there's no internet connection.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm saying is that it is a bit different. It will get there, but it's going to be slower.
It will be. It will be, no doubt. And think about the things like self-driving cars, okay? So this is one of my favorites. I'm surprised I didn't go right into this. Anyone who's eaten dinner with me has heard me talk about it. As a matter of fact, I've had some family members complain and be like, oh, God, this again. basically, think about it this way. Self-driving cars are going to come first in urban centers because they're going to be the most traversed areas. They're going to be self-driving cars gathering the most big data.
Yep.
About the area. It's all the mapping that needs to be done and understanding of the terrain and all that stuff. These self-driving cars are already in Pittsburgh and Phoenix. They have cars, Uber in Pittsburgh and Waymo, which is a Google subsidiary in Phoenix. They have cars that will pick you up with no human in the car and drop you off like an Uber. And for the first year or something, they had an engineer sitting in the front seat making sure nothing would go wrong. But in the last couple of months, I just read that in Waymo and Phoenix, they no longer have people sitting in the car with you. You literally hit the button, the car picks you up, you tell it where you want to go, it drops you off. It's going to happen in urban centers first for those reasons, like they're going to be the most...
Well, that's where the need is.
But it's going to spread from there, right? And so imagine the day, I went and looked up on Tesla's website. You can drive from St. Louis to Denver, and there's a route planner that tells you where the superchargers are, and it tells you exactly how long it's going to take you to charge. And it added like maybe an hour to the trip, not what you would think. Maybe two. I don't know. I'd have to go look at it again. But it was really reasonable. It's like if I could do the drive in 12 hours myself with a gas car, it's like, you know, maybe 14 hours doing it with Tesla superchargers. And the difference there is on the highway, those things drive themselves today, not tomorrow, today. Of course, all the legalities and stuff, they're like, you have to be ready and willing to take the wheel. If it beeps, you know, you're supposed to like take over the car. But as it is right now today, if you went out and bought a Tesla Model S, you know, a year ago or 2 years ago, I don't know when, it had all the hardware built into it, but none of the software ability to drive itself on the highway. And then one night, they pushed a software patch to the cars. And all of a sudden, you get on the highway, and now the car drives itself on the highway. It's nuts. So self-driving cars are going to be one of the things that I think will change everything. And one of the things I like to do when we talk about technology is I like to look at my day. As I'm going throughout my day, imagine, like, how is that going to be different in the future? And I look at the way our cities are built and our suburbs are built right now, and self-driving cars is going to change it completely. We just had a condo project here downtown Webster that they were complaining about parking, right? Well, you know, we're a ways away from this, but Tesla has publicly said, Elon Musk has publicly said that Tesla will have a fully self-driving car. And there's five levels of self-driving cars. The fifth, which is the highest, doesn't even have a steering wheel. You will never be able to drive it as a human. The fourth is it will fully drive itself in any weather, but it still has a steering wheel, and I believe it can ask you to intervene at some point. He said level four will be in 2019. You know, we're going into 2018 here in a month, so we're about a year away from cars that completely drive themselves everywhere, if his prediction is right. And look at these parking lots that you got in front of Walmart. Like, they're going to be useless. Your car will drop you off and it will go either park itself in a massive center parking garage, or more likely, especially in urban centers, it's going to be shared cars. Nobody's going to have a car. The average car is parked more than 95% of the time. It costs, it's the second biggest expense on an American family. Can you imagine if you can save thousands and thousands of dollars per year by signing up for a car sharing technology where you hit a button and the car will be there in a minute or two, pick you up, take you where you need to go, drop you off, and leave, right? And so there are a lot of people like, no, that'll never be me. I love having my car. Yeah, people will keep cars. I'm not saying cars are going to go away or human driving cars are going to go away. They'll slowly be phased out. They'll slowly become a novelty. You'll slowly have like pleasure driving courses that you can go to and do. But it's going to be more and more that self-driving cars are going to be the way things are. And you're not going to need massive parking lots in front of places. There's going to be circle drives where cars pull up and drop people off. And then they go on and pick up their next passenger. And it's going to be crazy to see the reconfiguration of our urban landscape and our suburban landscape as this occurs.
I think Dave works for Tesla.
No, but GM has a Bolt right now, which is a fully electric car. The B, the Volt is gas and electric. There's a Bolt with a B. It's got like 240 miles range, and it's $35,000. And anyway, GM, Ford, every major car company they are all trying to do this
to sustain themselves.
And it will happen. And let's tie that back to humans driving things. Okay, Tesla just created a Tesla truck. Now, I don't know if anybody has heard this. And I think, you know, we'll see if it plays out in the real world. But the economics that everyone is putting out is that the Tesla truck is going to cost less per mile than a regular human driving truck. And will eventually be self-automated. Right now, it's just electrical. So you won't even need a human, right? So let's say you own a trucking and transportation company, right? You're going to hire drivers who get sick and need to sleep, or you're going to have trucks that drive themselves on electricity that don't need benefits, will never need a pension, never get sick, no excuses, never have or very much lower rates of accidents. I mean, it's going to happen, and these Tesla trucks have been demoed and are out there now, and I Googled Tesla trucks orders, and the first couple things that come up, Anheuser-Busch orders 40 Tesla trucks.
Walmart,
on December 17th.
J.B. Hunt.
PepsiCo makes the biggest pre-order of Tesla semis, 100 trucks. This stuff's happening now, and I have these conversations with people at dinner, and they look at me like I'm insane, like this is 10 years away. It's crazy. I mean, and so between augmented reality, self-driving cars, this new medical stuff, like the iPhone really did change the way that people live their daily life. I mean, we're going to go through another wave of that here because it's kind of been stagnant since then. You know what I mean? There's nothing that's been super transformative.
There's been no large new device or new technology launch or release that's impacted the world the way the iPhone has.
That's right.
Not since then.
That's right. And maybe augmented reality won't, but I see it as a natural extension. I see it as being...
Well, because a lot of these things that have been going on are... It's not a product. It's things going on in the background that are very complex, like machine learning and algorithms.
Right.
You know,
that are just going to enable this.
Exactly. But you don't sell that. That's just the engine that operates some of the products and things that will be created and sold.
Yes. So just imagine the day when there are no TVs and there are no computer monitors because...
Anything can be a screen.
Everyone sits in the same room and watches the same program, you know, or they don't, or they watch different programs. But, you know, if you want to have the communal experience, you can all watch the same program, but it's just going to be you're all looking at the same invisible screen hovering in the middle of the room that isn't actually there. Hmm. It's kind of crazy to think
about. Well, let's
throw
some change challenges at people. Okay. I'll just repeat mine because I've already gave mine.
Okay.
Think about a technology that you've heard of and that kind of scares you or that you just have a negative opinion of it for whatever reason. Go do five. I said 15 before. Just do 5 minutes of research. But I want you to find articles or clips that alter your current opinion, that go against your current opinion, that are proponents of that technology, and try to learn something about it. I'm not saying you need to change your mind. That's not my point. But you need to at least be well informed
if you're going to hold a negative opinion of something?
My change challenge is to do what I said. Imagine how your life is going to be impacted by these technologies in your daily life. While you're out, you know, the next time that you drive past a big box store and you see an asphalt part, you know, a lake could be there. You could have so many other better things there, right? Imagine that gone. And what is in its place? I don't know. But use your imagination to think about what life's going to be like when, you know, these self-driving cars are talking to themselves, so we're not having traffic jams. And you're, by the time you get to the office, if you're going into an office, you've already done a half hour, an hour worth of work on your commute because the car is driving itself. And start to get those gears going so that by the time this stuff lands, there's not going to be a 10-year period like there was with the iPhone of trying to figure out what to do with this technology. We can kind of start to figure out what to do with it now, even though it's not in our daily lives. And I think if you start to use your imagination in that way, you might start to warm up to the idea of these things and even, you know, anticipate their arrival and think about the things that the good ways that it will impact your life, or at least the conveniences it will bring. Now, feel free, because anytime you use your imagination, you're going to have the negative thoughts about it too. We've talked about several of them on this. Like, what happens when you are in a physical store and pick up a coffee maker and your augmented reality glasses or contacts, put that in the big data pool, and now you're getting coffee maker ads everywhere. And how bad is that going to bother you? I think that people, when that was first doing it on the internet, it bothered people a lot. I remember hearing people complain about it and talk about it. And now it's just a commonplace thing. It's sort of like we just erode. It erodes the sharp edges that came with it. Yeah, the resistance goes away over time. So anyway, that would be my change challenges. Imagine some of the technologies that we talked about today. I mean, and let me give you a couple more, some food for thought. And I'll just touch on these quickly. I don't think we need to do a technology part three, but cryptocurrencies and digital money is going to change. It's going to change things. Blockchain technology, distributed ledger technology, it's all the same thing. Cryptocurrencies are built on blockchain / distributed ledger technology. And it's sort of like that mesh networks idea that I was talking about, where no one person will be able to censor the internet. There will be these currencies and these means of transferring ownership and stakes and interest in things that will not have a third party. You won't have to rely on a bank or a counterparty. That term counterparty will not exist, because these things will be able to make transactions between each other, because there is a sort of like a mesh network all watching all transactions at the same time and writing them down in their ledger as to what happened. It's coming, and it's kind of crazy. Bitcoin is going nuts. We could do an episode on Bitcoin because of how much of a buzzword it's become. They just launched the first Bitcoin futures trading, so it's actually becoming a commodity that, you know, the SEC is taking a look at. The Wall Street is obviously everyone's looking at it. That is coming, and it's going to change things. They just built this thing called Lightning Network on top of Bitcoin, because I don't want to go into it too far, but Bitcoin is slow with transactions for a good reason, because they don't want their ledgers to get too big, because they want everyone to be able to have a copy of the ledger. So they don't want to increase the block size, and so if you don't increase the block size, you can only handle so many transactions. And so now it's bogging down now that it's getting so popular and it's becoming slow. And their solution, other alternative cryptocurrencies are increasing their block size. Bitcoin has decided, no, what we're going to do is we're going to create another layer on top of the Bitcoin network. It's called Lightning Network, and there's one called Raiden something. But Lightning Network is going to be the one for Bitcoin, and they just tested it successfully the other day, where they went to a coffee shop. They bought a coffee and some, you know, a biscotti or whatever. It all happened on the Lightning Network. And they'll be able to do basically the same amount of transactions that Visa processes on a daily basis. This Lightning Network will make be able to be processed with cryptocurrencies. So, and the reason, like, okay, well, who cares, right? So I don't have to use a bank. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know how you feel about banks, but a lot of people don't like banks. So if they can, I don't know how you feel about relying on a third party. Like when you buy a house, you have to have money in escrow and wait for it to be released and all of that. That's all going to go away. It will literally be transferred between blockchains. And if you think about it, money now is the supply of money is at a central bank's whim. They decide, oh, we're gonna devalue this currency. We want to make more. We're gonna print more dollars. We're gonna use QE, quantitative easing.
Which, why don't we do a whole separate?
I'm sorry.
Dave's diving down the rabbit hole.
I said
here.
This was gonna be quick. Anyway, look into cryptocurrencies and blockchain. I could talk a lot about it.
Can't tell, Dave did the talking for 57 of our 59 minutes today, so he's pretty excited about technology.
Well, when we started this episode, Zach's like, I took notes, and he put all these things up on the whiteboard, and I started Googling some stuff, and he's like, well, I'm ready when you are, and I was like, well, I think about this stuff basically all day. I think I can talk about it for an hour.
Well, you proved that correct.
Sorry.
Well, no need to apologize. I think it's great. You're excited and passionate about technology and you know a lot about it. But we do need to do a separate Bitcoin episode because
it's here.
Well, even what you were just explaining there, most people aren't going to understand.
Yeah, people won't understand it. Let's just say
we'll do a Bitcoin education episode.
I think
Bitcoin for beginners. How about that?
I think that's great. Yeah.
Nice.
Okay. So we talked about so many cool things this episode. I don't even know. You'd have to probably re-listen to it and take notes for the things that excite you. But if some stuff that we talked about excites you, I urge people to go do a little bit more research on it and start thinking about what that's going to be like or the ways that they can use it or the ways that they can profit from it. You can start investing in some of this stuff now. You might be able to change your life if you do this the right way. Think about the future. Think about this technology. I love Zach's change challenge, which is try to get rid of those negative thoughts, at least look for the counterpoint, right? So if your point is a negative point, look for the counterpoint. Because even if AI ends up destroying the human race, you got to take every day of life that you have and live it to the fullest.
That's
and I
right.
think that's the point of a Lifelab.
Yep. As we say, experiment with life.
Experiment with life.